Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Welcome to The Miracle Within You. And today I am delighted to have on the show with me Barbara Murillo, who is actually an inspiration for this show. A few years ago, Barbara approached me with a book she was writing about her amazing experiences, and we collaborated on her amazing story. And it certainly shifted my perspective a lot on conventional healthcare, what is possible, and the miracle within us. So welcome, Barb. Great to have you on the show.
Hey, Howard, it is so good to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. This is a story that everybody needs to hear. So listen to the through to the end of the show. So perhaps, Barb, give us some background to this amazing story of yours.
Well, if people remember back in 2009, we had a pandemic then too with the H1N1 virus. And unfortunately, I had contracted it. It seemed to go for a certain age group, and I was in that age group of healthy female or in their 40s, 50s age. And the day I was admitted into the hospital, I remember thinking, oh, this is not going to be good because, Howard, I couldn't breathe. And if you remember what the H1N1 did, it shut down your vital organs. It attacked your lungs, and then it would put you into complete renal failure. And people who had it wouldn't really know they had it. It was just a flu symptom, but people just wouldn't wake up because in your sleep, if you're shutting down in your renal system, you just don't wake up. And it's a pretty quick process. So I got to the hospital just in time. My son got me there and didn't expect to see what had happened. Next thing you know, I was fully intubated and on every machine imaginable to keep me alive. And while I was in a 2-week coma, it was initially only to be a few days where they intubate you. And it was grim. My husband, then we weren't married, but he was there, and my sister, Carla, came down from Canada. And they were my advocates in the hospital, but they just didn't expect me to pull through. So they were already making my funeral arrangements. And so while I was under, I experienced some really amazing things, Howard.
Yes, yes, you did. And part of that H1N1 issue was severe heart problems, correct?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And you needed a heart transplant, you were told.
Yes. So
when
I came out, So a number of things happened while I was in that coma. I sustained a massive stroke on top of all the other complications. So when they did the CAT scan and they saw that my brain looked like the stars in the sky, that I would be a vegetable or a blind vegetable, and my heart was at a 10% injection fraction, and my poor mother was freaking out because she's like, no, Barbie can't live like this. She can't be a blind vegetable with no heart. It's like, it was grim. I mean, there was no hope. So that's why they were making my funeral arrangements. So what happened was, after those 4 days where I was intubated, they took me off being intubated, and they saw some signs of life. So they decided, okay, let's give her a chance. Maybe she is going to make it. So that's why I was in a coma for 2 weeks. But when I came out of the coma, one of the first persons I saw was my cardiologist. Doc, a miracle happened. My heart's healed. And he said, what? He said, no, you're on a heart transplant list. He said, Barb, you have a heart of a 90-year-old. I mean, it's at a 10% injection fraction. I mean, you're not going to survive. I'm like, no, I had a miracle. I was told by an angel that I have a blessed heart that's a healed heart. And he said, okay, well, just for fun, let's entertain this. Let's take you down for tests. So we did the testing and he came back later in the day and he said, in all my 40 years of being a cardiologist, I have never seen anything like this. Indeed, your heart has been healed. In fact, your heart would be one that we would put into a recipient needing a heart transplant. He said, you are a miracle.
Right. Absolutely. And neither he, probably nor anyone else, could come up with an explanation, a conventional medical explanation as to why 2 weeks in coma, just to help you stay alive, basically, how your heart could go from 10% to fully functional, not only fully functional, but the heart of a 20-year-old and one that yes. would indeed be transplanted into yes. somebody needing one. Mm-hmm. When you heard him say that, what was your reaction?
Well, it was like, yeah, I believe in miracles. Howard, my whole life I've seen supernatural things happen, especially in my life. So it was like, yeah, thank you, Jesus. And I also thought, well, you know, the Lord has a purpose for me and a plan in my life. Because that wasn't the only thing that got healed too. A kidney function went too. So I was on, right. What is that called? Dialysis.
Yes.
And my nephrologist said, you're going to be on dialysis for the rest of your life. And I said, no, if I received a miracle for my heart, then I most certainly received a miracle for my kidneys. And they were about to install another port up in my chest. And I said, no, don't even waste your time. But they went ahead and did it. And of course, a week later, they were taking the port out. And they said, oh, you know what? They are healed too, to a certain degree. So at that point, I was at a level of a 69, which is actually like you don't even really have any function problem.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to do dialysis and I don't wear a port. Thank you, Jesus, for that miracle too.
Yeah, your story, Bob, is really miraculous. It really is. I mean, there is no other way, I don't think, of explaining it. I think it is miraculous. And what was fascinating when Bob and I were starting to write this book, Bob had written about what she's going to tell us next, some things that she recalled when she came out of the coma that she had, quotation mark, dreamt in a coma. Now, don't be misled. Coma cuts you off from the external world, but not the internal world. So your brain is still going on and creating these dreamlike states while you're in a coma. And when yeah. Bob woke up, she remembered some of the things that happened in her head in the coma. So take us down that road, literally, as well as metaphorically.
Well, it seemed like, and I didn't realize this at the time, but whatever was happening in the room and the sounds and the pain that I would be inflicted with, like, you know, for instance, when you're intubated, there's a tube that goes down your throat. I could feel that. And when they put me in different positions, I could feel that. When they would clean me up, it's got to be cleaned up, I would feel that. I felt everything they would do, including keeping my lips moist, brushing my hair. But all these things turned into an interesting series of what we call coma dreams. So where do I begin? Because it is such a story.
Yes. Again, driving down the road.
Okay.
Right?
So, yes, my very first scene is I'm driving down the road and all I could feel was being very cold. But I knew I had to save my life. I knew that if I didn't get my heart started or corrected, that I was going to die. So I'm driving down the road trying to find something that I can use to harness to start electricity on my heart. But at the same time, what they were doing was they were shocking me to get my heart going. They were, what is that called?
Cardioversion.
Yeah. So that translated into this dream of going down the road. And my first attempt wasn't successful. So I was so upset. So I got back into my truck and I drove myself to a substation. But before I got to the substation, there was this husky. Oh, Howard, this really goes deep. I don't know how deep I want to go.
Well, just tell us about the general drift of,
okay,
we'll get back to the huskies later, but, you know, to the looking for the power station, looking for the electricity in your head as they were actually cardioverting you, right?
Okay, so then I get to a substation where I know somewhere there, all I have to do is wait for the guy in charge of the electricity to come in and do the cardioversion. And so I have to sleep overnight in this place. And I remember thinking, this is going to take forever. Why is it taking so long? Why is my life not important to people? It's taking too long. And then finally the guy comes and he tells me what he's going to do. But he kind of treats me like, I don't know, like my life really doesn't exist. And he gives me all these rules that I have to follow and I have to get on a downed power line. And I'm like, why do I have to stand on a downed power line for 3 seconds? 3 seconds only. If it's any more than that, it's not going to work and I will surely die. So I get on this power line and I can hear the electricity going, eh. I mean, I hear it. And then I hear them saying, good, great, it's done. Your life is saved. It worked. And I got off the downed power line and I'm like, okay, well, that's really weird. Now what? And he's giving me a bill for the service. But in my head, Howard, this is so real. This is more real than even when you live a life. I'm like, I'm out in somewhere, I don't know, like Alaska, because this whole thing was happening up in Alaska, which I've never been to Alaska, and it's cold, but that's probably why, because I felt the room so cold, and it was so uncomfortable, and, you know, to hear the sound of the electricity, but in the hospital room, it is cold, they have to keep it cold, and you do hear these sounds, and yeah, you're treated like a piece of meat, you're not around anybody familiar. Just the doctor's voices saying, yeah, she's good. She's going to be good, you know.
So this was the beginning of the coma dream journey. That was the first one you recalled, right? And by the way, as we're talking, I should mention the book that we are referring to where Barbara reached out to me and we worked on this book is called In God's Waiting Room. In God's Waiting Room, and you're still available on Amazon. And we'll talk more about that towards the end of the show. But I just wanted to make that point that this is all documented in a book, amazing book, In God's Waiting Room. Okay, so that was the first coma dream. What happened next?
So then I find myself in a situation, I'm going to back up a bit. So the first coma dream was called Fighting for Survival, which led into what I called Caribou Electric because it was in Caribou country. Right. And so the next one is called Secret Lottery Numbers. And that's where this woman comes in with power and she's having me guess the secret lottery numbers that only she has. And if I can guess the right sequence of numbers, she will transfer health and wealth and power over to me. And then I can get out of this coma. And so, and again, this dream seemed like forever too, because I kept guessing and guessing and guessing numbers. And she kept saying, nope, that's not it. And finally, I get to a point, I'm like, really? I can't get out of this coma. I thought, why can't she just help me? If she's a so-called friend of mine, why doesn't she just give me the secret lottery numbers so I can have health and wealth and power?
Right.
Yeah. Well, they just keep getting worse. So my next coma dream is called Record Ring Death. Well, this is where it really takes a turn for the worst.
This is a good one, folks.
Okay.
Tell us.
All right. So next thing I know, I find myself still laying in a bed. And just so the viewers know, I was in a bed too when I was in the secret lottery numbers. It's like a bed I couldn't get out of. And now I'm in a bed again. And I see this record. And on the label, it says, I can have all these things too, but there's a warning. When I say all these things, I can be not only healthy and well, beautiful, gorgeous, I can have the world by the tail. I mean, the promises are getting bigger and bigger. I mean, who wouldn't want to be perfect and young and healthy and rich and powerful and have any guy you would ever want? Okay, it's when you're young, not now. But anyway, so there was a glaring skull and crossbones saying, when you start this record, it is too late. Your fate is sealed. And in this coma dream, my mother had sent this to me to help me, but she figured I probably wouldn't do it anyway. But after she sent it, she thought, what did she do? She loves her daughter. Why did she send that? And of course, that's a whole nother story. I'll just tell the drift of it. But I got the record and I started to play it. And sure enough, my fate was sealed. And within 24 hours, I'm lying in this bed and the record rings start to unwind off the record as it's playing. And they start constricting around my ankles and getting tighter and tighter and tighter, like a boa constrictor was snuffing out your life, cutting off my blood flow. And I'm screaming and kicking and thrashing, trying to get these record rings off my legs, and nothing's happening, Howard. And I feel myself, my life being snuffed out and my last breath just hissing out of my lungs, which brings me to now I'm dead. So the next one is called, next chapter is called Found Dead in Dumpster. So now I'm dead. And I look around and there's this, I'm discarded on this old drunk, I guess a bum or a derelict that's stinky and smelly and it's a heap of garbage. And you got to know, I've really gone back in time. Like I'm back to a college girl that's like, you know, 18 years old, 19 years old. So I've really gone back in time. And I'm like, does anybody even care? Do my parents even wonder where I am? How come my friends aren't here? Like, I've just been discarded in a heap of garbage with this old drunk, and he's flailing and screaming, knowing that I'm dead on him. So he's trying to get me off, and passerbyers come by and they're all making fun. And then the cops show up and they're all making fun of me. And I'm thinking, I could be their daughter. Like, what if they had a daughter in college and they found out that they found their daughter dead with record rings, like black vinyl all around their ankles. And then the evening news comes and starts reporting on this victim of another case of vinyl record death. I'm like, I'm watching as the whole world sees me as a dead person. And it's my fault that I'm dead, thinking I had my way with this drunken bum.
Yes. And if that's not enough, you have to wait after the commercial for the resolution more coma stories, more miracles. But for right now, we're going to take a break for this message from our sponsor.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the amazing, miraculous story, Barbara Morello. And without further ado, I want her to continue telling us about her coma dreams. Remember, when we left, she was dead in a dumpster. What happens next?
Oh, Howard, how it feels to be dead. And in my head, I was truly dead. So I was taken into this very old building and put on a steel table, because now they're prepping me for my funeral. And I hear my sister, and she's brought beautiful flowers, brushing my hair and doing my lips, putting my makeup on to make me look really special for my funeral day. And I'm like, doesn't she even want to know why I was found dead in the dumpster? Like, they're just, my life is over. But I got to tell you, it really made me think about what kind of life did I lead? And then when she was done prepping me, her and Dino walk out of the room. They turn off the light. And I'm thinking, they didn't only just turn off the light. They turned off whatever was the respirator to keep me breathing. Now I'm really fighting for my life. And I'm like, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And I'm like, well, if I can't breathe, that means I'm not dead. Because if you're dead, you wouldn't have that sensation. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm not really dead. Or am I? But I mean, I've never felt anything like this, that I just couldn't get oxygen. So then next thing I know, I'm in this very dark place with this man who is looking at me and saying, you know, I love you, Barb. I'm like, I don't even know you, but I want to help you get out of this thing. So here's the deal. If you serve me for the rest of my life, I'll take care of all your hospital bills. You have hospital bills in the millions. Do you have medical insurance? And I'm thinking, no. Oh boy. And look at you. You're a hideous mess. Your mouth, your tongue looks like a snake tongue with the middle cut out. And your left hand is a lobster claw hand. He said, no man is ever going to want you, but I want you. And I'm like, ooh, well, this is bad. He said, so you only have so many minutes, 6 minutes to make this deal with me. And I'm like, I have no one to discuss this with. And he kept saying, but you got to serve me for the rest of my life. I'm like, the more I looked at him, the more hideous he became. And I started to think, my time's running out, which he reminded me. So with being under so much pressure and no one to discuss it with, and I really, Howard, I wanted to get out of this thing. It's been so long. So I said, okay, I'll take the deal. And in the very last split second, I recanted it, because just like that, I knew when I looked at him, it was Satan. And as the moment I recanted that deal, an angel came and took me by the hand and got me out of there and said, whoa, you almost sold your soul to Satan. Congratulations that you recanted at the last second. And then I was taken to heaven. So while I was in heaven, it was called a place of healing. And the angel told me some things up there about me, my health. And he said, your body is too sick to inhabit. So you're just going to hang here until you're ready. And then we're going to send you back into your body. And then he told me about my heart. That's when he said, though your heart is gone, we're blessing you with a healed heart. And then he told me about my eyesight. And he said, you're going to see through different eyes. And I'm like, Well, what does that mean? Well, he didn't elaborate on how I'm going to see through different eyes. I found out when I came out of the coma. But he also told me about that I would be doing ministry work, and I would be giving birth to something. Like, I'm like, I'm too old to give birth to a child. But what does that mean, giving birth? And but I'll tell you what, I've never been in such a beautiful place. The colors are unlike the colors we see here, because we're trapped in a meat suit. So our eyes only allow us to see through the lenses that we have. When you're in heaven, you're not bound by physical matter. So you can see color like a spectrum like you've never seen. And the hearing, like our hearing again is bound by our physical body. But when you're up there, you hear in so many different tones and levels. It's incredible. And the love that I felt, it was like, I didn't want to come back. I'm like, can I just hang out here? And I sat in this most beautiful, like it was like a spa. And if you've ever been to Europe, to any of the bathhouses, like in Vienna, Austria, or in Budapest, oh, it's like beautiful tiles with inlay of gold and shimmering, amazing colors. And I asked the angel if he could tell me something about himself. And he said, he's the angel of pediatrics. I'm like, what's the angel of pediatrics? What is that? Mm. And he had the most interesting eyes I've ever seen. They were like the most glimmering color of blue. And he had light that shone out from around his pupils. And he had brown, longish hair and a mustache. And he just kept holding my hand. And I just kept feeling love. So next thing I know, I end up back in my body. And now I'm really back into the senses of being still in a coma. And but now I know I'm okay. So now I'm going home. And I get on a bus. Now I'm going to go, and I don't know, it's all, I was in Mitchell, Ontario, Canada, which is funny because that's where I grew up. Now I'm going back to Miami because I am well. And next thing I know from that, I'm waking up out of my coma and I see my family, my boyfriend, Mike, my sister, Carla, and they're all cheering because I've opened my eyes. And Carla says, look, she's smiling. And I put the biggest grin on my face because I thought, what is she talking about? I'm smiling. You want to see a smile? Watch this. So I went really big with the smile. Well, that's when they let me know I'd been in a coma for 2 weeks. Of course, they wanted to see me smile.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they had been sitting there for 2 weeks. Praying for you and loving you to the point where they got to this point where you actually, much to their amazement, woke up.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the amazing story. And so when you first approached me, you had an interpretation of these coma dreams, I think, which yeah. was that they were just kind of a distortion and a reflection of literally what was going on around you. So when they were cardioverting you, you thought you were driving down the road looking for electricity. When this was happening right. to you, you had this dream. When you this was happening to you. And when you sent me that and I looked over it, but I was able to look back knowing what actually had subsequently happened to you in this miracle, I was trying to work out what do these dreams mean, right? What do these dreams yes. mean? Because I felt intuitively that these dreams had some very real significance for you, that they were related to critical spiritual and self-reflection, self-esteem issues. And we talked about that. And I think it became more apparent to you as we talked about it that that made sense. There's one yes. coma dream that we didn't talk about because we only talked about seven of them, and there's another half a dozen.
Yeah.
But one where inadvertently or otherwise you killed a husky or a couple of huskies. Yes. And then you get a grieving phone call from the owners, you know, blaming you and making you feel terrible. And that actually did relate to something that happened to you in your childhood, which you can yes. now relate to the listeners.
Okay. So back when I was 12, my parents went to Switzerland for 2 weeks, and my best dog, my favorite, my one and only love, was a husky. And he was left up at my dad's factory to guard the factory because he also didn't accept the babysitter. He wanted to tear her up. So the day that my parents were coming home, I went to get the dog, and then I decided not to. I changed my mind because I really wanted to see my parents, and I didn't want, you know, anything being about the dog. And I was really excited about the Swiss chocolate they were bringing back. And I heard in my spirit that if I didn't bring Mustard, the dog, home, he wouldn't be there in the morning. And I'm like, oh, no, no, he'll be there in the morning. And it was so intense on my spirit to take that dog. And I didn't. The next morning, I went to go get my dog and bring him home, and I couldn't find him anywhere. And then I look and I see my dad, and he's walking toward me with tears. And I've never seen my dad cry. And his arms were open. And I'm like, what the heck's going on? And he said, Barbie, your dog was run over by the foreman this morning. And oh, Howard, I blew snot bubbles, I think, for like a month. I couldn't stop crying because I felt it was my fault. Had I listened to what was on my spirit, this never would have happened. And I have carried that trauma throughout my life.
Yes, yes. And so that was an example, a big one, of how in these coma dreams, you were reliving, refashioning, I think, things that had happened in your life. I mean, your dad was a good man, but he was pretty authoritarian, mm-hmm. strict, made you have self-image when you were younger of a lot of doubt about yourself and so mm-hmm. forth. And it seemed to me, as you were telling me, that these coma dreams, while they were related to some of the things that were going on around you, were actually much more related to very personal, spiritual issues that had laid locked inside you for a time.
Yes, and I think the hard part in that particular coma dream, while I was on my quest looking for electricity, was when I was driving in that very cold truck, it came to me in the dream that I had to wipe out, I had to run over a husky or two in order for my life to be saved. So again, I had to make another decision in my dream. I either kill the huskies to live or I'm not going to live. So just like that, out of nowhere, the huskies run out in front of me, and I don't try not to hit them. I know I have to run over the huskies, and the blood splats all over the windshield. And when that happens, I bring the truck to a stop, and I am just beside myself that I had to take this dog's life, which then, yes, it takes me back to, had I at that time taken that dog wouldn't have had to die. So that night, I guess I was in like, my phone kept ringing. That's actually was the night that I was in the power substation. The right. phone kept ringing. I'm like, why is there a phone in a substation? And then he gets on and he says, you killed my dog. You took my, this is our livelihood. And I'm like, what? Well, first of all, how did he know I killed his dog? Second of all, how does he know what number to call when I'm in a substation? And he's saying how he and his wife live in a cave. I've taken away his livelihood, just guilting me and wailing and crying over the phone. And his wife is wailing and crying over the phone that I robbed him of his huskies. And I'm thinking, what? How is the husky's life more valuable than my life? Yeah, that was bad. That was a very dark moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the first part of my coma dreams.
Yeah, and those coma dreams were really centered around the notion, I think a lot of it, of you somehow not being good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And very low self-opinion and esteem, which is, if I might use the phrase, heartbreaking.
Yes.
And so you've heard all the backstory. But you also know, listeners, that Bob recovered. And when we come back from the next commercial break, we'll find out exactly how and what that really means. So let's step aside for a minute and let you listen to our sponsors and digest this amazing story.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You and today's episode with Barbara Morello telling her amazing story. We were talking about how the dreams seem to reflect a very low self-worth in you.
Yeah. And, you know, now I'm going to go back to the very first dream because we finally got there. So now it'll make sense to the viewers. But my very first dream was I was desperate, as we talked about, to get electricity. So the thought I had was, if I could find any wrecked vehicle of a drunk driver, I could repossess that vehicle, take the engine out and harness myself to that engine. And so as I'm driving down the road, I see a wrecked vehicle, truck and trailer, and I find out from the cop on scene that indeed it was a DUI. And I said, okay, then I just need the rights to that so I can shock my heart. And he says, oh, you don't understand. She comes from a family of influence and power. So if you want to get a hold of that wrecked vehicle, you need to go to the attorney's office and present your case. I'm like, doesn't he understand? All I need to do is harness myself to that engine. So he tells me where the attorney's office is, and I go and I sit before the attorney and I present my case. And he says, oh no, you don't understand. This family, they're powerful. Nope, you will not be able to get the rights for that truck and trailer. I said, but I'm dying. He says, sorry, Miss Morello, you're gonna have to find electricity somewhere else. And when I walked out, I thought, what? How come there's no empathy for my life? Why is it with people with power have all the rights? And that's, again, low self-esteem, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've gone through these things. You almost did a deal with Satan. An angel then tells you you're going to see through different eyes. Your heart will be healed and you will be part of a ministry. And you wake up. And you tell the cardiologist that, hey, an angel told you'll be fine. Rather skeptically, he takes you, does the imaging, comes back, and cannot explain or probably even believe that your heart actually is healed.
Yes. And I do see through different eyes, Howard.
Right.
Because what we find out is the stroke that I had sustained actually did take out part of my vision. And I see through a bunch of holes. And from a certain point down, I'm completely blind. But I was left with enough vision that, and it took me a while, in recovery to work through and to learn everything all over again. Mm. So I'm like a notch above legally blind.
Okay.
So I've learned how to function, but it took me out of my career. So I could no longer return to my career. But the good news was, obviously, the Lord had different plans for me. So 3 months after, I heard the Lord speak to my spirit and say, you're going to go into ministry work, and it's going to be called Seahorse Miami. Well, actually, Seahorse. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be spelled S-E-E. And that means seeing God at work. And because I gave you and I restored your heart and altered your vision, you also see differently. And I'm like, okay. And he said, you're going to be working with horses. And I said, well, right now I don't even have horses. He said, oh, it's coming. So he said, but for now, what I want you to do is get into Bible study and do volunteer work to get you going. So that's what I did, Howard. I joined one of the biggest Bible studies in the world called Bible Study Fellowship. And it's an intensive Bible study program. And I started volunteering at a residential treatment facility in Miami called Agape. And the women there are, they've come through a sex trafficking. They're through substance abuse, all kinds of abuse, physical abuse. So there I first started an art program, because remember, I was an artist. Of course, the viewers don't know that. I was an architectural rendering artist, and I worked worldwide for architects. So as I could no longer continue that career, I brought a creative way of, a spiritual creative way for the women I was working with to find healing and to find a relationship with Jesus. And then eventually that led into the horses, and they would come out to the barn, and I had a team of wonderful volunteers that would help me put the ladies through this amazing program that really brought them, because, you know, working with horses is like an experiential learning. It's like learning to ride a bike. I can tell you how to ride a bike, but you got to find that balance to keep you there. This program was so successful in transforming the hearts and minds and spirits of the women coming through this residential treatment program in the equine part of it.
Yes. And you've continued with your love of horses. Tell us a little bit about that too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I found that the horses were also healing to me. And you know, for the first couple of years, a lot of, you know, I had to find my balance again. There's a lot of things that people don't realize when you sustain a stroke and you come out of being in a coma for a couple of weeks. You got to learn to walk all over again. You got to learn to eat, breathe. So learn to drive, learn to use a computer. I mean, you kind of lost some of my memory too, but I found the horses so healing, and it really opened me up spiritually as well, to really receive even more healing in my soul. And writing this book with you, Howard, that's been also transformative in my life too. I did a lot of healing through you and I writing this book together, because you would help me see things that I never saw before. So the horses just were like the icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, on my bucket list, I'm now 62 years old. And what 62-year-old starts colts? Well, I've never done that before. So this has been a really liberating experience too. And I'm really enjoying that process as well, because horses are just so amazing.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they really, really are. And what's interesting from my perspective, after, you know, working with you on this and hearing the story in detail and really believing that you had a sort of spiritual awakening or some massive spiritual event where somehow in these coma dreams you revisited some of those challenges that you had about yourself, and that they were resolved in that dream. And what I've come to learn recently, I mean, that's one sort of metaphorical explanation of that. But how does that work medically? Can we possibly explain that? And, you know, I have done work with Dr. John Leaf, and he has an episode on The Miracle Within You, and his work on intercellular communication is unbelievable. And so my view, just my view of what happened with you, is that you had this massive spiritual transformation, and that generated so much energy within you, within every cell in your body, and the mind too, because the mind and body are not separate. I think it just generated so much energy that somehow that healed your heart. I mean, it is amazing to think that before going into a coma, your heart was, you know, barely functioning, and you come out of it with a fantastic functioning heart.
Yeah.
How else do you explain it?
I don't know how you explain it. And even the kidneys, you know.
Yes.
Because the kidneys, if you looked at the x-ray, it was like all dead tissue. So that can never be regenerated. It's just dead, hard, no good tissue, which is why they said that was it. I would be on
dialysis
for the rest of my life. I'd never be able to function. I mean, how does that happen?
Right. Yeah, I know it. There is no, short of this sort of massive intercellular communication that generates healing energy throughout your body, you know, I don't know there's any other realistic explanation of that. But we know, because what we know from Dr. Leaf's work is there is this amazing system of connection in the body of all the cells. So there is an infrastructure there that could be energized to this degree. And I do think that's what healing is about.
Well, yeah. And I was told when I left the hospital how hard it would be to get my life back together because of all the trauma my body went through. And but my will in my head is also so strong. Like I'm just like, no, that's not going to happen. No, I'm going to be on my feet. No, I am going to recover. And it was in my will that I was going to not only walk quicker than they said, I was going to be running the block quicker than they said. And I superseded everything I was told that I would do, because I'm like, heck no. You tell me I can't do that? Watch, I'm doing it.
And that is, that's the mindset I've seen. Apart from yourself, I know half a dozen other people, not quite as dramatic experience as you, with the coma dreams and all of what you went through, but half a dozen people who were told by numerous doctors that were going to die very shortly. Every one of them has not only survived, but thrived. And the one thing they have in common with you is that positive mindset. No, I'm not.
Yes.
No, I'm not. And that mindset also generates that energy within you that has the power, the miraculous power to heal you. One thing I would like to ask you is I'm sure the viewers are asking, or listeners are asking themselves that, is before all this happened, were you particularly religious? Did you go to church, or where were you?
I wasn't. I was, I knew, you know, I know God exists. I know Jesus exists. I was brought up in a household where my mother, you know, she took us to church every Sunday. And so I would consider myself a Christian. Was I a practicing Christian? No, I lived like everyone lives. I wasn't going to church. I wasn't repenting of my sins. I was just living life to the fullest.
We could talk about this indefinitely. It's an amazing story. I'm just glad that I have this platform again to share it with so many other people. I think it is an example of what we would call a miracle, and it is within us when we have the right attitude, positive mindset, and resolve those issues and do not let them take our lives and our energy from us. We can create this sort of miracle. It's really amazing, Bob. Tell us about the book, In God's Waiting Room. It's still available, right, up on Amazon?
Yes, it's available on Amazon, and the full title is In God's Waiting Room. The only way to avoid death was to face her life in a coma. You know, what I forgot to tell you, Howard, was in the one coma dream with Satan, where I had the lobster claw hand, well, in reality, that my hand was stroked out and I couldn't move my thumb. My left hand was very stiff. So when I came out of the coma, it took some time to get this left hand going again, but it was the same mindset. I rolled that ball in my hand every day. I refused to think I was going to have a deformed left hand, and my hand is fully functional, and I don't even feel the numb area anymore because I couldn't even feel my thumb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. And that's a great way to end, because again, it's about the mindset, the attitude, the positivity, the energy. That's what stimulates the miracle within you, I believe. Yes. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.